Delighted to have the opportunity to be with you tonight. I'm trying to get used to what Nathan did to me. I think he put some mojo on me and feeling kind of wired. We'll talk about being wired for sound here in a little bit. And tonight's lesson is the hardest of the week, at least for me, because I'm going to ask about 100 of you young people to give me your feedback. And the question I'm asking you is, was it fair? Because it's easy for old guys to take pot shots at younger people, especially if we don't like something you may be doing or some technology that you have that we feel pretty awkward with. And it's really easy to be out of balance as we address those kind of things. So your challenge tonight is to critique, correct, and improve, because this is a request that I receive often when I'm asked to go speak. It really was motivated in Covington area in Kentucky near Cincinnati. The elders there saw that there were challenges in regard to technology, and I thought, who of all people, why are you asking me? I'm one of the least technical people I know. And so what I did is I appealed to the Corps of Engineers, no, Ken, not the same Corps of Engineers, the Corps of Engineers at Purdue University, and asked our double E's with master's or PhDs and otherwise to help me to think about the challenges that you face on a technological level. And I want to suggest to you, this is not just a challenge for those of you who are young. It is a challenge for those of us who are old. And so I would like to ask you if you would just take a moment with me to pray as we begin. Oh, Holy Father, we want to be purer in heart, and we want you to teach us your ways. Father, there are challenges and heartaches and joys that we experience, and we ask you to help us to present your truth in love, in fairness, balanced, that will give you glory and will help us to be people who will be your people forever. We ask your blessing and we ask for your guidance as we speak tonight. In Jesus we pray. Thank you. We live in a media saturated world. You already knew that. It is all around us. We cannot escape it. And so we have to deal with the world in which we live. And how are we going to cope with that? It's critical for us to be balanced. We're going to focus on that tonight. And I'd like to suggest to you that God was the master of the visual aid. Jesus was the best visual aid teacher you ever saw. God has always used visual aids. And simply because the technology changes doesn't mean that we should run away from that technology. Some of us remember when brethren back in the 1960s were afraid of the projector that used the Jewel Miller film series. Some of you remember that the overhead projector was anathema in some places. And so we have to be thinking about how do we use the technology. I'm really excited to be here because of the way you use technology in a very powerful way to share God's good news. But as we consider that, I'm hoping we're going to have some screen facilities here pretty soon. There we go. I'm not seeing anything on this screen, but maybe that could change. And Nathan's going to come to the rescue already. He told me I could call on him at any time. You old folks, this says old timer. That's you. Oh, that's me. Old timer. Is this a tool? Is this a tool? Good tool? Bad tool? It depends. It depends, Luke. It could be a good tool. Man, if I got one of these ropes around my neck and I need to cut out of it. By the way, Mr. Harden, this has been used to, you know, take the insides out of one of those things we were talking about earlier. Okay, so it was helpful on that day as well. Good tool or bad tool? Depends on who uses it and how they use it. Yes? Morally neutral as far as the tool. I got one of these in here. Good tool? Bad tool. It's a tool, isn't it? Some of you have to have something like this in school. Now, I am really up to speed. I have moved up to a 6S. I hope you're impressed. Because my first, I know Jacob's just miserable, I know. But it's not a flip phone. But I'm going to tell you that this thing is a whole lot dangerous, more dangerous than my old flip phone. And I had to push 3 times for one letter on that flip phone. You remember that painful texting? So here's a tool. Good tool, bad tool. And by the way, you can choose to learn how to use them, or you cannot. My brother John today, as we were visiting, he's got all kinds of these technological tools. He's having Bible studies with his tablet, with his phone. He's using YouVersion for all kinds of stuff. But some of us old people say, I don't want anything to do with it. And that's okay. It's okay to choose not to avail yourself of that technology. But for a lot of us, we kind of need to know how to use these tools. And sometimes they're required tools, aren't they? Some of you have to respond to the professor's questions electronically, either by your tablet or by your phone. You use Kahoots or something else, and they measure all your responses technologically, so your kids are expected to have one of these things in their hand when they go to school. They really don't have a lot of choice as to whether to learn the technology or not. And so as we consider those things, I want you to think about the fact that we can embrace the tool to God's glory and make good use of it. It's a tool. As we consider that, I want us to think about some principles in regard to what causes the tool to be harmful. It's not the tool, it's the person who's operating it. Do you not yet understand that whatever enters the mouth goes into the stomach and is eliminated? But those things which proceed out of the mouth come from the heart, they defile a man. For out of the heart proceed evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witnesses, blasphemies. These are the things that defile a man. The phone doesn't defile you. Now, I don't know about what all the stuff coming, radiating out might do to my brain in the next 20 years, but the tool itself doesn't defile you. What you want to do with the tool may very well be where the problem lies. And so for us as people of God, and thank you for coming as people of God, we know we're a temple of the living God. As God has said, I will live with them and I will walk among them and I will be their God and they'll be my people. Therefore, come out from them and be separate, says the Lord. Touch no unclean thing and I will receive you. We are God's temple. And that comes from what we think, comes from our mind. And so we are instructed to be wise in our management of time. We're to have nothing to do with fruitless deeds of darkness, but rather expose them. We're to be very careful then how we live, not as unwise, but as wise. We're to make the most of every opportunity because the days are evil. We have the opportunity to be really wise with the tools and the technology that we have. We can really do a lot of good in a short amount of time with that technology. So I want to ask you about a tool. You're going to be able to do the survey. You're going to be able to evaluate. This is a 3-minute Bible study. When I'm on campus and I'm studying with somebody who knows nothing about the Bible, we always have Wi-Fi. This is one of the really, I'll just leave it out. This is a tool. You tell me what you think about it. And we're hoping you're going to hear something. It worked on my computer. Nathan's on the bubble now. Pretend I'm Scott Smelser. That would be a break. You know, I'm also a foot taller. You got to do that. You got to have a deep voice. And now what's going on up here on the screen is telling you what time your services are. So technology can have its limitations. And that's why I kind of appreciate people like Melvin Curry who will say, this is my PowerPoint. And so Scott, in the 3-minute Bible study, we practice this stuff, takes us through all of the Old Testament and New Testament in 3 minutes and gives us an overview of those particular significant events. And then young people who've never known anything about the Bible can learn about Abraham and Isaac and Jacob as Israel, the 12 sons of Joseph. We'll try to narrate as something might happen on the screen. And of course, you'll remember the exit from Egypt as Moses leads the people. You'll remember Mount Sinai and the covenant that was given. I should have practiced this part more. And then you'll remember the tabernacle. And my screen's gone, so let me come back over here. And so you'll remember 40 years of wandering and Joshua leading them into the promised land. I haven't had this experience before. This is good for me. And you'll remember that after Joshua was the judges, and you'll remember Samuel and then King Saul and then David and the promises of the Messiah through David. And then we'll remember that the kingdom divided after the temple was built. I think I'm going to put myself out of the misery. Yes, that's good. Thank you, Brother Cook. If my eyes would allow that Israel and Judah symbol back there, we would have the prophets. All right, I think I've had enough suffering through this. How about you? Can I go ahead and move out of Babylon and get out of captivity and go back to the promised land and maybe rebuild the temple? And perhaps we could get all the way to Jesus, and I think I have just been ejected. And so as we consider that, by the way, please do Google when you get home. Just take your phone. When you get home and do 3-minute Bible study. It'll be, and Scott's got a lot of them. They're really handy and they can be used anywhere, even if it's on your data plan and not on Wi-Fi. So as we consider the technology, technology's not new. In 1844, Mr. Morse sent his first telegraph message from Washington, D.C. to Baltimore, Maryland. By 1866, a telegraph line had been laid across the Atlantic Ocean from the U.S. to Europe. And when he sent that first message, what he said was, "What has God wrought? What has God accomplished?" But this technological breakthrough, where we finally had virtual communication, came at a cost. And so by 1890, a book came out. I know you're going to love this, Wired Love. Because what was happening with the telegraph operators was they were flirting with each other as they were sending the messages from place to place, and they knew how to use that Morse code, and they knew how to flirt with one another, and so there had to be a new standard given for the flirting telegraph operators. And you thought you were the first ones that were tweeting and twittering and all of those kind of things with your Instagram, and nobody knew. And so as we consider that, there are always problems whenever there are a new technology, and we need to be aware of those. I want you to think with me a little bit about some consumption statistics. Now, I'm owning right now, this is about 5 years old. These consumption statistics on Captivated by Media, this is about 5 years out of date. So feel free to update it. I'm hoping Eric's going to fix this thing and make it much more 2018, maybe you could do 2019, that'd be helpful. Would you do it that way? And so as we consider those kind of things, notice in regard to the documentary, there's a copy of it here on the table. This was recommended to me by a master's level double E. He now has 5 children. He knows all about the technology. He uses it all the time in his workplace, but he was concerned about his kids. And so in this documentary, we're going to notice that there are more TVs now than there are households. There are more TVs than people per household. In this old stat by Kirby Anderson, he estimates 18,000 to 22,000 hours of television by the time a child is 18 years of age. 20,000, let's just round it, 20,000 hours of TV. I'm thinking that for a lot of you, TV's passé. You don't do a whole lot of TV anymore. You do it more on your tablet. You do it more on your phone. You YouTube live stream more than you simply use a television where you're being told what you can or cannot watch based on your cable or satellite provider. And so just think about the hours that are spent in that consumption. This guy named David Walsh, he's a doctor of neurology. And he makes some observations in regard to what happens in the brain, in regard to the endorphins and the other chemicals that are stimulated in regard to video experience of very young children. He estimates that 53 hours per week is the consumption of the average teen for their video or screen time. 53 hours per week. He mentions that we're hardwired to pay attention to things that move, things that are emotionally stimulating. And all of us know that. If you're in a classroom, in fact, I remember being at camp not too long ago, and the guys were listening to the teacher. They were enthralled with the teacher, I'm sure. It wasn't me. And I was in the back, and a mouse ran by. What do you think every one of those guys was thinking about? Mr. Gator, did you see that mouse? They didn't hear a thing that the teacher was saying, because whatever was moving was more important than the audio information they were receiving. All of us are stimulated by movement, by motion. And what that does is we get trained to notice lots and lots of movement, and then we have a hard time focusing on something that is not emotionally stimulating. And so when children go to school, they're having a really hard time concentrating when a teacher is presenting information that takes more than 30 seconds. And so for those of you who are hoping to have children, those of you who have young children, I hope you'll consider some of these challenges. And Dimitri Christakis was willing to address this recently. He is a pediatrician in Seattle Children's Hospital. And in his interview, and you can see it, you can Google it, you can go to the sites, he expresses concern for little children and their ability to retain information because they have been so saturated with motion in media. The American Association of Pediatrics recommends, don't shoot me, I didn't say it. Well, I guess I am going to say it. No screen time for children under 2 years of age. None. Now, moms, I do get it. I do get that I got to go to the bathroom sometime. I got to get a shower sometime. I do understand that it is a really handy babysitter to put him in front of baby Einstein. I do get that. I'm just suggesting to you what pediatricians are observing in what's happening to the developmental mind of a child. The more fast-paced the programming, it reduces the ability of the child to give focused attention. What they recommend in place of screen time? Reading and singing. You know, I felt Sunday when we talked about a parent's treasure, I didn't really give you tools that really help. The beginner's Bible, the read and go picture Bible, singing all those what we call children's songs or vacation Bible school songs, those are extremely helpful. And so as I drive my grandchildren to school sometimes, we are singing song after song. We're working through the books of the Bible. We are memorizing scripture. And I'm being told by the experts that that's better than putting a screen in front of them. Wouldn't you know? Now, understand the screen can teach a lot of things. The screen is not bad. Pew Research tells us that there's an alarming number of teens that sleep with their cell phone on. Now, ladies, I don't know if the guys do it. I know girls do it. But I'm told that the reason you need to sleep with your cell phone on is you don't want to show up at school the next day and find out you've been unfriended on Facebook, because that would be social tragedy. And so young people's parents are saying, I can't sleep at night because there's so many dings on my child's phone at 3 o'clock in the morning. How can I make an observation? Who is the parent? Who bought that phone? I don't know many 10-year-olds who can cough up $800 for a new phone. Just a consideration in regard to the fact that we need rest. I didn't get it sent to Gary yet, but I'd like to share with you all a cell phone contract. An agreement between parent and child as to how that device is to be used. Dr. Jeff Myers speaks about the dorsolateral prefrontal cortex. I think that's a part of your brain. And he talks about it being the executive center of the brain. He talks about video games stimulating the pleasure center of the brain. And he says there's a sense of accomplishment without ever doing anything. If you saw the video series Stepping Up by Family Life, you would see that. In fact, I've seen men in their 30s, maybe close to 40, living at home with their mom,
And they are up all night long. They've got the boombox. They've got all the video games. They have graphics galore. And they're exhausted at 10 in the morning because they've been fighting all night long. And I'm not talking about people who are outside of, quote, the church. And so I want you to consider those kind of things. We think we've done something that our mind tells us, so we're worn out, but we've really accomplished very little productively for our family or for society. And I know there are gamers who are going to disagree with this. They have in other college campus towns. And so as we consider those kind of things, Dr. Wall says the neurons that fire together wire together. Translated, that means whatever the brain does a lot of, the brain gets good at. And so we think we can multitask, and I know Randy can. I saw him do it at supper. But it's really not very effective typically for us to multitask, and it destroys efficiency and accuracy. Nielsen Media reminds us that the average teen sends out 3,339 text messages per month. That is moving it. I'm not good at that. But you think about how many selfies get posted on a daily basis. Just consider the consumption. I'm asking you to consider that. Mark Bauerlein takes a shot, Emory University down in Georgia. And his concern is that with the technological devices, as we're seeking to have family relationship and communicate with moms and dads, that actually what you can do is you can circumnavigate, you can work around your parents so that they don't know a thing about what you're doing, who your friends are, or what you're saying, actually even about your parents. Now, we used to do that when my brother and I knew German and our parents didn't. Don't you tell. And so as we think about that, there are ways to use communication and language to get around our parents. And oftentimes we parents are dinosaurs when it comes to your technology, and we don't know what you're doing with those devices. Moms and dads, wake up call. And so as we consider those kind of things, now I want us to consider with you moving from consumption to content. What is it that I'm looking at, I'm reading, I'm viewing? I want us to think about your digital footprint. I'm told, and you can correct me, I'm told that with our technology, we leave what's called a digital footprint, that our future employers, universities, as they're looking at incoming students, are able to go and see where you've been, what you've done, what you've viewed, what you've said, and they make determinations as to whether they will employ you or they will accept you as a student on their campus. Digital footprint. What we think and what the devil tells us is this doesn't hurt anybody but me. That is an absolute lie. And we'll address that more specifically later. So as I think about content, as I think about the fact that children are saying, Mom, Dad, I need help. Wouldn't you expect Tim Winter to say this? That as the president of Parents Television Council, that media is toxic. Phil Chalmers is going to, after spending 25 years of research on the effect of violent media, after 25 years, here's his observations. Two groups that deny the effects of video violence are those who are addicted to it and those that sell it. Dick Rolfe, you may remember his name with the MPAA as he developed the Dove Foundation. In 1968, there was a new rating system called the MPAA. Category R movies had never been shown in the public before. In the last fourth of the 20th century, there were 12 times more R-rated movies than G-rated movies produced. 12 times more. The G-rated movies were 11 times more profitable than the R-rated ones. Media is not only about making money, they're about changing your thinking. And so we often will say and we'll think, well, I don't know. That didn't affect me. I don't remember any language in that movie. And when a young or old person says that, they're telling you the truth. They don't remember it. They really can't remember any language in that movie. And what has happened is we become numb to vulgarity. And please don't think this is a young person problem. I'm very concerned about those of us who are 60 and older who would have never listened to what we listen to on the television today. Anyone who would say that in our house at least 10 years ago would have been escorted out of our house, and we sit there with that remote and listen to all kinds of vulgarity on our cable programs. We recently have been given the gift of Netflix. It's hard to find something worth watching. It really is a challenge. Even the family movies. I'm thinking, what would Jesus say if he's sitting beside me while I'm watching this? Would I blush? Would I say, I gotta change the channel, I gotta turn this thing off? And so there are ways to get some help. I want to suggest, when we say it doesn't affect me, how do you know it doesn't affect you? Is it so numbing that you no longer even realize what's happened? Kids in Mind is a decent website. I get Screen It every week, comes out on Friday. Screen It, I'm told, is not as good as Kids in Mind. But any young person who will tell you, oh, I'm going to go to the movies, I don't know what it is, Mom and Dad, you can know. And you can know exactly what it is, and you can know how many times God's name's taken in vain. You can know how many sex scenes are in it. You can know all of the violence that's in it. You can know all of that in advance if you want to. If you want to. But you can know before. And then if we're thinking that, well, why do people do this? Why do they make this? There's money. Lots and lots of money. In regard to the Super Bowl, advertisers spend $3.5 million for a 30-second ad. $3.5 million for the slime that's shown at the Super Bowl. They think it affects you. They have an advertising department that spends millions to affect you. You're looking at old gaming. Halo, Halo 3, $170 million in the first 24 hours. Grand Theft Auto 4, $230 million the first 24 hours. Call of Duty Black Ops, $360 million in the first 24 hours. Now, if you're, some of you older folks are like, what is he talking about? I see that on your face. And that's what I was thinking. And so I'm thinking Grand Theft Auto, oh, it's about stealing cars. Yeah, and you're laughing. And so one of the young men up at Lafayette just kind of took me aside. I said, Alan, this is a lot worse than stealing cars. Number 5 is even worse. And yet, we invite our buds on campus to come and play those games well into the morning. And parents are clueless as to what exactly it is that we're watching. I want to ask you, would you watch it if Jesus was sitting beside you? Would you watch it? Guess who pays for those games? It's not the kids. It's the parents. It's the thousands and thousands of dollars that parents pump into these games. And then the kids come and they bring the games and they say, please get this away from me. Please throw this away. All these videos, all these DVDs, all these games, please take it away because it's destroying me. Yes, I've had that experience. The addiction to video games is growing at a rapid rate. And so many times children's viewing of laptop, tablet, TV, streaming, television is self-regulated. And parents have put televisions in the bedrooms of their children and then complain to the teachers because my kids are so tired they won't turn the TV off at night. I'm asking, who are the parents? And so as we consider these kind of challenges, Robert Pittman, I think, accurately said, as the founder of MTV, we don't just shoot for 14-year-olds, we own them. We own them. Major Phil Willis, an Army chaplain, commented on the trauma that occurs from combat. And he remembers soldiers coming to him with PTSD symptoms, but they'd never been outside the wire. Those of you in the military know what I'm talking about. And what has happened is, in the military, there is so much feeding on violent gaming that guys are experiencing PTSD without ever being in any kind of combat because of the games that they're viewing. So the battles for hearts and minds, the battleground where good and evil is fought, is in the human mind. We have to gird our minds for action, as Peter reminds us. And so God doesn't think it's cool when we entertain ourselves with violence, murder, and mayhem. Psalm 11, verse 5 says, the Lord hates the one who loves violence. Proverbs 6 says, there are six things the Lord hates, seven that are detestable to him: haughty eyes, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, and a heart that devises wicked schemes, feet that are quick to rush into evil. I can still see it as if it were yesterday. It's probably been at least 10 to 12 years ago. Here's an 8-year-old sitting in his underwear. I go in to visit with his dad, with a young college student. The boy is gaming. He's got his headset on. He's fighting other guys. And they just kill people, just lots and lots of people. And then he just pushes a button and resets, and the game starts over. When I pull the trigger on my .30-06 and it hits somebody in the heart, I can't push a button and then come back to life. And yet, not just young people, sometimes 40 or 50-year-olds, they're playing those violent video games. It's not always a connection. They're playing violent video games, and then they build a stockpile, and then they start shooting, and they realize it's real blood, and people don't come back to life. But if you train your mind, if you feed on violence, it comes out. Either on your wife, on your kids, on your playmates, on your friends. But the violence does raise its ugly head. You can be assured. It's enough of the negatives. It's enough of the heaviness. There's good stuff that we can do as the people of God. There are valuable videos. We can teach that the Lord is our God. The Lord is one. And we can love the Lord our God with all our heart, with all our strength, with all of our might. The commandments, these precepts that are given to us today, are to be upon our hearts. We can impress them on our children. We can talk about them when we sit at home and when we walk along the road and when we lie down and when we get up. We can tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on our foreheads. We can write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates. And we can use technology to do all of that. But we need to think and be deliberate and purposeful as to what we say, what we share, what we show, and what we listen to. And so the consequences, as we consider this, as we consider the challenges, is the idolatry that comes. You didn't get to hear a particular clip. I would encourage you to go to YouTube, Captivated by Media, watch the movie trailer, and listen to the young lady who said Facebook had become an idol in my life. She said, I was on all day long. It was so enchanting. It was a persona. She said, it wasn't real. It replaces real relationships. We have virtual relationships. And so there was a report came out not too long ago in WTHR up in Indianapolis. And it stated that in regard to social networking, 1 in 3 divorces in England is caused by social networks. 1 in 5 are attributed to Facebook in the United States. Julie Andrews, not Sound of Music, Julie Andrews, an attorney stated that there have been several cases that I've been involved in where they find out, lo and behold, their spouse has a dating profile. I see a lot of couples coming in with affairs, or sometimes just emotional affairs, that are a result of Facebook or Twitter. It often starts with a simple friend request. The biggest thing I've seen is people reconnecting with people from their past, innocently saying, oh, this is somebody I went on a date with once in college. But then you see it completely pull a marriage apart. There is a reason, she says, why these people are in our past. And may I advise, this is not 15-year-olds. This is 50-year-olds. By the way, if you're thinking about, well, what about online dating? It works. I know a couple in their 80s, and that's how they met. You thought you were cool. And they're, I think, close to 90 now. Be careful. It can be a good tool, bad tool. Depends on how you use it. And so as we consider, as we try to bring this to a close, the Bible's really blunt about evil companionships corrupting good morals. We have to think about what our children are seeing and what they're doing. If your teenager hangs out on social media with girls, we'll just leave it there. Don't be surprised to find pics of your own teen soon on display for all of Twitter's 220 million millennials to comment on in the most hurtful words imaginable. Yes, we're talking about sexting now. And if you young people are saying, man, he's just pummeling us tonight, may I tell you that I know of 30 to 40-year-olds who are doing it, and I'm talking about members of Churches of Christ. What have you put in your child's hand, and what are they doing with it? Do you know? I was in a Bible study up on the hill, and we noticed the dogs were barking. This was in Tennessee. Dogs were barking, and there was a copperhead out there. One of those guys now calls that Copperhead Ridge. I don't know how you feel about copperheads. They're poisonous snakes. And I don't know if you were comfortable having them in your room. Maybe you're comfortable having them in your room as long as you've got them in a cage. But me and copperheads, I let them live. They don't bother me. But on that day, one of us had to go. And the 12-gauge decided he had to go. Parents, when you hand your teen and preteen a smartphone, you have handed them a copperhead snake. He won't bite all the time, but he can bite plenty. And how many times does he have to bite before your child dies? I want you to think about that. Statistics are very clear. It's pushing toward 9, but the average introduction to pornography for young men is age 10. 10. And the almost total way that they get access to that pornography is their phone or their friend's phone. You think pornography doesn't hurt. I'm here to tell you it kills. It is sexual immorality that kills men and kills children, and kills wives, and devastates families. And the temptation, particularly for men, is to cover it up and ignore it and act like it's not a problem. Stats tell us that 50% of men are addicted to pornography, 20% of women. And when Pew Research evaluates those in churches, they're finding the same statistical levels of use and abuse. It's a problem. We need to be men that address it. For me, it was TV. It was when our landlord in Budapest, Hungary, wanted to help us out and give us cable. I don't have cable. 20 years I haven't had cable because I don't handle cable. You can check my phone, and all of my accountability partners can check my phone at any time. You can check my computer. You can check every one of my computers. And I can suggest some tools like Covenant Eyes, but I'll tell you, NetNanny has some outstanding stuff for Android and iPhone. NetNanny is an absolute must if you're serious about fighting. NetNanny. And so, accountability partners challenge each other to be truthful all the time. I would encourage you to develop that kind of a network. And so as we consider then, there are other challenges that are faced we're not going to address right now. There are some challenges that we face in regard to behavioral issues. One principle, as you can read, recommended this particular regimen. Did you notice how much exercise was involved? When you saw Fireproof, you noticed that exercise was absolutely critical for Caleb's success. And so as we consider those things, we recognize that addictions don't give up easily. We're going to perhaps need a media fast. The guys that come to camp, one of the most challenging things for the Dove girls and the leadership guys is they have to turn their phone in on Sunday night. They don't get it back until Friday night to charge it up for Saturday. May I tell you, it is a wonderful week. You watch these young people actually be able to communicate with one another. Some men die in ashes, some men die in flames, but far, far too many men die playing silly little games. Parents, be forewarned, be prepared. I beg you, please protect your children. So let us resolve to be people of a pure heart and have a steadfast spirit within us. Help us to be determined to be noble and just and true and pure and lovely and good and have virtue. Meditate on these things. Help us to take captive every thought to the obedience of Christ. And this is my prayer, that your love may abound still more and more in real knowledge and all discernment, so that you may approve the things that are excellent in order to be sincere and blameless until the day of Christ. We can't stop here. There are people right here, you guys, Eric and others, you have all these abilities to glorify God and to tell millions of people the gospel. Even in little podunk towns like Payton City, West Virginia, they are live streaming all over the world, Doug. There was, and this is 2 or 3 years old, 123 countries are hearing the gospel every Sunday live stream from a little place in the hills. There are tremendous blessings, tremendous opportunities. You can do so much in reaching people with the gospel with your smartphone, but you got to be smart. And don't feed me this, oh, kids are so smart today. No, they're not. They may know how to push buttons, but they're not any smarter than my great-grandparents and yours. And so protect the little ones. Protect the fountain. Out of the water, the wellspring, the issues of life are found. You poison the wellstream, you poison the population. So many good things about media. I hope you'll share even more. The Bible app now makes translations of the Bible, thousands of versions available. Finally, from everyone who has been given much, much will be demanded. And from the one who has been entrusted with much, much will be required. This hasn't been fun to listen to at all, has it? It's really kind of sickening. My desire is for you to see Jesus, holy and pure, seeking to put into your hand technologies that can turn the world to him, that can point others to Jesus. But those same technologies can be used and abused by Satan to destroy us at the very core of our being. We choose good tool, bad tool, God's tool, the devil's tool. The tool's not the problem. It's my heart. God wants us to give him our heart. If you've not yet done that, we would encourage you to come and seek him and to learn about him and seek to obey our King Jesus. We invite you to him as we stand and sing.